Hi, welcome to Info Dumpies. My name's Brianne. I'm autistic, I have ADHD, my pronouns are she, her, and I am a freak in the sheets, also a freak in the streets, but on the toilet, I'm straight up a demon.
Agreed. Hi, I'm Violet. My pronouns are she, her. I have ADHD. And if I was an ice cream flavor, I think I would be snickerdoodle cookie dough.
Oh, hell yeah. I'd eat that up.
Yeah. I bet you would. Homo.
Yeah. So today is mini dumps.
Yeah, mini dumps.
And if you're a newbie and you have not joined us for mini dumps, welcome. Mini dumps are a format of episode that Violet and I do sometimes where we both have topics that would be really good for info dumpies, but maybe we don't have enough to fill our usual 45-minute to an hour-long episode. So I get two little mini dumps and Violet gets two little mini dumps, mm-hmm. and we mash them together to make an episode.
A sort of mini mega dump.
Yeah, we mash our dumps together to make an episode.
An info dump beetle.
Yes, yes, we mash them. So, Violet, would you like to start with one of your topics?
I would love to start my little gay penguin, because that's my topic, gay penguins.
Aw, gay penguins.
Yeah, my first topic is, of course, gay penguins. You've probably seen in common media, in the news and things, there's news articles all the time about some new pair of gay penguins at some zoo somewhere. And if you've watched Parks and Rec, the TV show.
Yes, 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 yes.
There is a pair of gay penguins in the show that's featured as like a news article at one point. So it's
Leslie,
kind of like a common...
Leslie gets the backing of the gay community for supporting.
Exactly.
She becomes a local queer icon.
And we love her for that. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I was just thinking, you know, it seems like it's pretty common for penguins to be gay. Like, it happens like a lot. And like, I don't know that many penguins, but like more than half of the ones I've heard of in my life have been gay. So,
I mean, they do like tap dancing.
They do like tap dancing.
They do like tap dancing. So
just think about that one for a minute.
Think about that for a minute. Relax, so tap actually... dancers. I used to tap dance.
And look at you now, straight as
now.
An arrow.
Oh, God is an awesome God.
Oh, goodness. So I actually found a research paper that was done. This paper was on just how common is it for penguins to be gay. Specifically, the paper is called Homosexual Mating Displays in Penguins. But I was looking through this paper and I just thought some of the statistics were interesting. And I was going to just mention some of those and then quickly just talk about some of the noteworthy penguin couples.
I love it.
Yeah.
They are one of my favorite animals. Violet knows this. Mm-hmm. I love seeing penguins and I spend an inordinate amount of time just kind of staring at them. I adore them.
They're great. They're just lovely little guys. And it's interesting when you get into the statistics of this, because part of the reason that we see so many gay penguins is because there's actually a difference in how common it is for a penguin to be born male versus female. And it's, yeah, so 62%, 62.3% specifically of penguins are males, generally. It's an average.
Interesting.
Yeah, so it's only, oh God, I'm bad at math, 38% or so that are female rather than the 62% that are male. So, of course, just naturally, you would expect there to be more male gay penguins, mm-hmm. right? And that is true. But a lot of people have theorized that the reason that we see gay penguins so often, which, by the way, same-sex courtship displays in penguins were observed in 28.3% of the 53 pairs studied.
You know,
out of
my heart said 25%, so I wasn't that far off.
Yeah, absolutely. So out of the 53 pairs of penguins that were studied, 28% were featuring same-sex courtship displays of some sort. And a lot of people theorize that, oh, it's just random. Penguins can't tell each other's gender because they don't have they on site, right? They can't easily determine another penguin's gender just by looking at them. Well, this study sought to either prove or disprove that. This study actually included a graph showing if it was random and penguins can't actually tell gender, how common would it be for male penguins to mate with other male penguins, female to female, male to female, etc. And when they looked at the expected results if it was random versus the expected results if it wasn't random, there was actually pretty clear evidence that it's almost certainly not random, that they can tell gender just by looking at one another, which I'm interested.
Did the study use the word gender and not sex?
It did use sex in some cases. It used gender in a few spots, but primarily it was saying sex.
Okay, because saying gender, a penguin don't know what gender is.
I should clarify.
Is that a fish I eat it? A gender?
Sorry, I just feel weird saying penguin sex sometimes.
Get over it. Say penguin sex. Yeah, penguin sex.
So yeah.
Penguin sex is the thing where you both wear tuxedos and trying to come up with what that means for humans.
I love that. You both slip around on some icy floors and
dump a drum of lube on the floor.
There you go. You slide on your bellies into each other until a baby happens. When we have penguins and they're getting together, it's pretty clear that they can tell the sex of the penguin that they're looking at just by looking at them. With humans, it's actually really hard for us to tell the gender of a penguin just by looking at them. We actually oftentimes will have to do a blood test to determine the sex of a penguin. In a couple cases in the study, there were actually same-sex pairs that were observed learning each other's calls, which is apparently a really essential step in the pair bonding process, which is like they're together for life. So out of the 53 couples, two of them were learning each other's calls, which is like so sweet. So yeah, penguins are gay about a quarter of the time.
I love that. And it makes sense that I was drawn to these incredible creatures.
Yeah, absolutely. So I have a list here of some really cool, notable gay penguin couples. First on the list, I have Roy and Silo from the Central Park Zoo in the U.S. They are chin-strap penguins, and they're both male. And their love story, starting in 1998, inspired a children's book called And Tango Makes Three after they successfully fostered a chick named Tango. Yeah. There's also Harry and Pepper from the San Francisco Zoo. They are Magellanic penguins, and they're both males. They were together for 6 years and successfully raised a foster chick together, and they actually made headlines in 2009 when Harry, drama, left Pepper for a female named Linda.
Oh my god.
Yeah, there's like penguin drama.
Oh my god.
Yeah, and I feel really bad. Like, there were people like online saying Linda's a homewrecker.
Linda's a homewrecker.
Yeah, so wild stuff in the penguin world. So, but good on Harry for being like bi and proud. You know,
I mean, can't fault you for that. I'm bi and proud, and I don't cheat.
That's true. Well, I mean, I don't know if there was cheating. It just says that Harry left Pepper.
Still,
so I think they broke up. Either way,
still, he's not a good representation for my community. I'll tell you that.
Okay, fair, true. But moving on to more positive stuff, we have Sven and Magic from the Sea Life Sydney Aquarium in Australia.
Sven and Magic.
They're both Gentoo penguins, and they are both males, and they're called a highly successful power couple because they have successfully adopted and raised two chicks named Lara and Clancy.
I love Sven and Magic and their beautiful family.
Right. There's also Rocky and Marama, and they're two ladies from the Sea Life London Aquarium in the UK. They are Gentoo penguins, and they raised a chick in 2019, and interestingly enough, the chick was featured in the news for being raised as gender neutral. They were not referring to this penguin by gendered pronouns, which I thought was really cool.
Sweet.
Yeah. It's like, hey, because, you know, gender is something made up by humans, as we discussed earlier. Sex is something that's like a biological thing. There's also Ron and Reggie from the London Zoo in the UK. They are Humboldt penguins, and they actually adopted an abandoned egg in 2015 and raised that chick, Chiton, and they are said to be very strong parents. Oh, so, yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. I've got several more. I have quite a list. There's Skipper and Ping, both males, from the Berlin Zoo in Germany. And they actually gained attention because they were trying to incubate rocks and fish before being given a real egg to foster in 2019.
Oh, my fucking heart. Right? They wanted a baby. Mm-hmm. They wanted a baby so badly. I'm going to cry incubating a rock.
Yeah, it's so sweet.
My heart. I love animals.
I love animals so much. This next pair, their names... It's Thelma and Louise.
Oh my God.
They are king penguins, females, and they have successfully fostered more than one chick for their colony and are one of those rare couples that are like fully pair bonded, like no chance they're ever breaking up.
Oh.
Yeah.
Little
they're so
sapphic
sweet.
Penguins.
And it's pretty rare. I have another male couple here named Elmer and Lima. They are from the Rosamund Gifford Zoo in the US. And they are actually the first successful same-sex pair at that zoo to foster an egg, which they hatched in 2022.
Penguins are so wonderful and gay.
They're so wonderful and gay. I love them so much. They're so sweet. And I understand why they're your favorite animals. I've got one more couple here for you. And these, listen, these are from Spain. They're from L'Oceanographique in Spain, which I think is an aquarium. And... great job naming these penguins. This is Electra and Viola.
Whoa,
they are
cool.
Right? They're Gen 2 penguins, females, that successfully incubated and hatched a chick in 2020.
Amazing.
Against all odds.
Amazing.
Yeah. So that's my list of just really cool penguin power couples. And Harry and Pepper, obviously they have their drama, but that's very rare. Usually penguins don't have drama.
It is. I just hate that it's a bisexual penguin starting this drama. It does not feed well into the stereotypes the community already deals with.
True. Harry, if you're listening, you need to clean it up and you need to apologize to Pepper and stop being a messy bitch.
Harry, you are for bisexuals what Caitlyn Jenner is to trans people.
Mm.
Okay.
Mm.
Okay.
Go off, queen.
You need to cut it out. That's a joke, everybody. So, are you ready for something completely different?
I would love something completely different.
How much you know about toilet demons?
Well, I mean, I got my own demons that I've wrestled in the toilet.
So,
on occasion.
So, for both today's lucky winner and Murphy Bay Magic, I do a lot of reading about demons. I sometimes incorporate them. So one of my favorite characters I've written is Master Leonard, the goat demon man, who's based on a demonology thing. Amy from Murphy Bay Magic, who was based off of a demon I found in my demonology research. I can't possibly use all of the very good demons I find, though. And for a while, I was kind of circling around a toilet demon. Because did you know that humans... circling around a toilet demon. Because did you know that for eons, humans have been afraid of something reaching up and getting them while they poop?
I mean, that makes sense. I'm afraid of that now that you've said that.
Yeah,
but that's a thing that could happen.
So we're going to talk about a few of my favorite toilet demons.
Now... these are toilet demons that you like?
As far as cool demons go.
Okay. You're not saying I wish we had these cool toilet demons.
No, I'm not saying I approve of their behavior either. I certainly do not approve of their behavior. They're
just their aesthetic.
Not even their aesthetic, because the first one is quite nasty.
Oh, hell.
they hail from Japan, and while technically a yokai and not a demon, there's a difference. They still get listed amongst the toilet demons, is Akaname. Akaname is a nasty little toilet freak from Japanese mythology. So
I will say, Japanese mythology and like lore and yokai and stuff like that, y'all do good jobs at coming up with really unique stuff. Like, great work on that, y'all.
Yeah, so Akaname literally translates to filth licker.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Oh, no. It's the Kakaname.
So they love dirty bathrooms.
Oh.
And these goblin-like creatures will use their long, sticky tongues to lick up dirt, mold, hair, and, you guessed it, dookies from bathrooms. And while their appearances in writing have been described as anything from having one or two eyes, or being green or pink, or having one or five toes, the one thing that remains the same is that they have a long, sticky tongue.
Wow. What a great topic, and I'm so glad we're now moving on.
Oh, no, I have a few more.
Oh, no. Oh, my gosh.
So the best way to make sure an Akaname doesn't settle down in your bathroom is to keep it clean.
Got it. So there's some subtext here is what I'm picking. No, just kidding. I'm kidding.
No. Maybe next time it's been a little bit since the upstairs bathroom was clean, I'll just go whisper in your room, Akaname.
Yeah, that's fair.
Okay, so next toilet demon we're moving on to.
Okay.
Take a trip with me to the ancient Babylonian Empire, where we're going to talk about Sulak.
Sulak. I've heard that somewhere before.
Sulak. He is a bipedal lion, and he hides in the toilet.
Now, instantly, the first thing that comes to mind is, if you're a bipedal lion man, how you gonna fit in a toilet, buddy?
Shh. They were big pits you shit in back then. When I say toilet, I'm thinking of the modern toilet. They were big ass pits everyone just shit in, right?
That is true. In modern day, from what I understand, there's like squatting toilets that are effectively a hole in the ground.
They have, for a degree. They have modern like ceramic and like flushing mechanisms and stuff.
Gotcha.
Little lore about me. I shit in a beautiful squatting toilet in Morocco, where I was the tile on this is so beautiful, I feel like a criminal shitting here. But a girl's gotta poop, you know? That's one thing about me. I am not poop shy. But anyway, this bipedal lion guy was blamed for all manner of disease. He is what they describe as a lurker, which is a demon who waits for you to be alone so he can strike you down.
So poop in pairs is what I'm hearing?
Sulak's favorite place to strike people, as you can guess, was the turlet.
Their most vulnerable moment.
So it was believed that you had to be quiet whilst using the turlet, or Sulak would be alerted and kill you. So I guarantee you had someone who's going, and being dramatic really in the toilet. And someone's like, hey, do you know there's a fucked up lion who will strike you down if you don't shut up? I guarantee that's the origin of this one. If you don't shut the fuck up, man, a lion's going to kill you.
I'm just thinking of so many times where I've been just ripping ass into a toilet so hard, I would be dead.
You would be dead,
like,
right?
Like the echo off the bowl is cacophonous. Sulak, I fear.
Yeah. So if someone was sick, it was common to hear that referred to as being touched by the hand of Sulak.
I don't know why, but that's really funny, and I'm going to start using that. Like, I'm touched by the hand of Sulak. I don't know. Sulak's been touching me.
But it was believed that when he struck you down, like truly struck, it would kill you. So the origin of Sulak is very likely developed from the fact that many people have strokes while on the toilet from straining. And they, instead, without their understanding of medicine and science, they said, I believe it's a lion man who lives in the poop hole who has struck them down for being too loud.
It's a good theory as any, honestly.
Working with what they had, their guess was as good as mine. I'd be like, I don't fucking know.
I mean, Yeah, Uncle Ched or something like was grunting and groaning on the toilet, and all of a sudden we open the door and he's fucking dead.
A lion man
standing at the bottom of the toilet clearly got him up the ass.
All right, so now we're gonna get to, I think, I hesitate to say my favorite one because people are gonna be like, you're into this, but he is a nasty dude. I find him interesting. Belphegor.
Oh, I've heard of Belphegor.
From, I think, you most likely have. Yes, he's the more popular one. He's from Judeo-Christian. Yeah. He's from Judeo-Christian mythology. So the likelihood that you've heard of him is probably higher.
And I think there's a mention of him in D&D somewhere.
Might be. So he started in Assyrian mythology. And back then his name was Baal Peor. He was he was associated with orgies, and people worshipped him using a dick-shaped idol.
Okay.
Right?
So he really let himself go, it sounds like, if that's where he started.
I think he got tired, and you'll see what I mean. Belphegor doesn't live in a toilet.
Okay.
He actually lives in hell, and he reigns from a porcelain throne. Because
I'm sorry. When you say porcelain throne, do you mean a literal throne,
or
do you mean
toilet.
He reigns from a toilet?
A toilet.
Oh my god.
Yeah. Like there's something that calls him like the demon of latrines. Like he sits in a wall of latrines. but he is the demon associated with the seven deadly sin of sloth.
And that, yes,
and
sloth.
Getting
That's
up,
where I've
heard
of him.
Getting up to go to the toilet is simply too much work for him. So he says, I'll work where I shit.
His legs must be fucking asleep 24/7.
Yes.
Nothing but pins and needles down there.
So I'm sure you're wondering, how do I invoke his power?
Yeah.
Yeah.
How can I take the power of Belphegor for my own to improve my shitting?
Oh, it wouldn't improve your shitting. Don't you know that he tempts people by giving them ideas for inventions that will make them rich, and he corrupts them with wealth?
Oh, no, I didn't know. What does that have to do with toilets?
I don't know. I kind of wonder if it's like I get my best ideas on the toilet kind of thing.
Hmm. Oh, interesting. So like when you get a good idea on the toilet, that's the influence of Belphegor.
Well, because to invoke his power, being on the toilet is apparently the best way to do it. And then, you might want to make plans for your birthday because he is apparently strongest in April.
Hey, bestie. So if Aries bestie.
So if you're hoping to get ideas for an invention, you should probably start fibermaxing in March because favorite offering is turds.
Yeah, hopefully I can lock in that fucking Metamucil sponsorship I'm vying for.
Yeah, yeah. So in April, if you want an idea for a good invention, you should invoke the power of Belphegor, and while you're on the toilet, you make him a tasty little snack.
Well, hold on. Does he eat the poo-poo?
You know, I wasn't clear on that. I think he might. His favorite offering is turds, so to invoke his power, I don't know what else he's doing with them.
Interesting.
And then, according to De Plancy's Dictionnaire Infernal, he is Hell's ambassador to France.
Oh. What a prestigious title.
He's Hell's ambassador to France. So from what I understand, Mary Magdalene is like their patron saint in France. So apparently Mary Magdalene is his natural enemy.
Can you imagine being like a saint or like a really important person and they're like, all right, here's your mortal enemy. It's poop-eating toilet guy. And it's like, no,
no,
God, no, anyone but that.
He says, God. Hello, gorgeous.
Hello, gorgeous. You got any turds for me? It's April.
Feeling powerful.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So.
But yeah.
Wow, these are some nasty fuckers.
Yes. So those are my toilet demons. And I hope you've enjoyed them. I know it's nasty, but I don't care.
Well, I hope I haven't ruined your appetite, because speaking of soft serve, my next topic is ice creams from around the world. I just want to talk about like interesting ice cream flavors and types of ice cream from different parts of the world. Me and Brianne live in the U.S., and we're like generally privy to.
We live in the United States.
Yeah. So our experience of ice cream, for the most part, has been fairly US centric, at least speaking for myself. But I recently learned about a couple interesting types of ice cream in other parts of the world, and that sent me down a rabbit hole learning about all kinds of other ones, including one from Puerto Rico.
I don't quite... I'm going to figure it out. Well, you're going to tell me.
I'm about to tell you. I'm going to start with it because I'm so excited.
I've eaten a lot of ice cream in Puerto Rico, and I don't...
I have a feeling I'm going to say this, and you're going to be like, oh, well, I didn't... I guess so. I don't know. So the ice cream from Puerto Rico that I'm thinking of is something called limber.
Oh.
There's limber de leche, limber de coco, limber de maní, which is limber de peanut butter, and limber mantecado, which is like a vanilla standard limber. So what limber is, generally, is you take like a plastic cup, you put... milk and fruit juice, all kinds of different fruit juices. Yeah. It'll be either coconut milk or like regular milk, sometimes condensed milk. You'll usually add things like fruit and cinnamon and vanilla flavor. You can even do a coquito flavor, so which is like a kind of like a Puerto Rican eggnog. Maybe not an eggnog.
It's better. It's coconut and cinnamons.
Yeah, yeah. So you can do rum. A limber de leche.
Yeah.
That's a coquito flavor,
so
right?
So I was not thinking of this as ice cream, but I've had this from a roadside stand. It's fucking good.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. It looks really good. And traditionally, this is served in like a plastic cup.
Yep.
And you squeeze the cup and pop it up.
Yep.
And out of the cup to eat it. And it's got milk in it, but it's kind of a little bit like a sherbet or a shaved ice kind of a texture from what I understand, because it's not churned. It's just frozen.
Yeah. No, so, I haven't had it since I was a kid, because before for anyone listening, I became vegan in 2007. So I have not, have not had it recently.
Limber de coco.
With coconut
milk.
Yeah.
Vegan.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So I actually looked up the history of this because I wanted to cover this one a little bit more than the others. Supposedly, this is the story behind the name. The origins of limber trace back to the pilot Charles Lindbergh, who you may have heard of.
Mm-hmm.
He apparently visited Puerto Rico in the 1920s. Lindbergh, being the first aviator to fly solo across the Atlantic Ocean, arrived on the island on February 4th, 1928, his 26th birthday, and was welcomed with these frozen milk juice cups. Locals supposedly began recreating the treat and calling it limber, a nod to the Spanish pronunciation of Lindbergh's last name.
And it's funny because even with the R at the end, do you know Puerto Ricans just tend to turn the last R into an L? So limber.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Limber.
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 I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds right. But yeah, so that's the first thing on my list here. I have quite a few. The next one that I wanted to talk about was an Ecuadorian dessert called helado de paila. I'm not sure I'm pronouncing this right. It's P-A-I-L-A. Paila?
Paila.
Helado de paila?
Paila? I think so, yeah.
Supposedly, it translates to ice cream from a pot, which paila. Is basically, okay. Yeah, it's hand-churned ice cream, which mixes fruit juice and a dairy base in a large bronze or copper basin, paila.
Cool.
Placed over a bed of ice and salt. So imagine, like, if you've ever made ice cream
hell,
at home.
I bet that's good.
Right? It sounds so good. Because you're churning it by hand, you're generally getting more air whipped up into it. So it ends up kind of custard-like.
Fluffy.
Yeah. Yeah. Traditionally, it includes ingredients like blackberry, passion fruit, and soursop.
Oh, so, fuck me up. Give me a vegan version of that. Ooh.
Yeah, it comes from the Andean region of Ecuador, and it was created by Rosalia Suarez in 1896. There's actually some South American fruits that are kind of specific to the Andean region that are typically mixed in with this ice cream. There's Taxo, which is like a mix between banana and passion fruit.
Oh, hell.
And it's kind of like a tart mix of those two. There's also Arraza, which is a guava family member from the Amazon with a tangy citrus-like taste. And then Naranjila, also called Lulo, which is a citrusy pineapple lemon-flavored fruit and a member of the nightshade family. Those fruit are generally used for this ice cream. So it sounds to me like it would be a really unique experience to have some of these. I would love to try some of these someday.
They look amazing.
So moving over to kind of some other parts of the world, If you go to New Zealand, there is a beloved New Zealand classic called The Hokey Pokey, which is good. Literally, yeah, all it is, it's plain vanilla ice cream, but you mix it with solid lumps of honeycomb toffee.
Oh, fuck me up, yeah.
Yeah, it sounds really good, right?
Oh, fuck me up, yeah.
And apparently in New Zealand, supposedly, if you say hokey pokey, people associate it with the ice cream, not the dance like they do here.
I would say, yeah, I get it. If we understood hokey pokey to be a delicious honeycomb toffee ice cream, fuck the weird dance. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. In Germany, there's a popular dessert that looks like a plate of spaghetti, but is actually ice cream called spaghetti ice. All one word, spaghetti E-I-S, spaghetti ice. It was invented in 1969 by Dario Fontanella in Mannheim, Germany. It is a combination of ingredients designed to resemble a standard plate of spaghetti bolognese, but it's not. The noodles are made of softened vanilla ice cream or gelato that is pressed through a potato ricer or a spätzle press to create long, thin strands that look like noodles. The tomato sauce is actually a red berry sauce traditionally made from strawberries. The Parmesan cheese is generally white chocolate shavings or coconut flakes. The base of the spaghetti is often it's served like on a bed of whipped cream, which sometimes freezes a little bit at the edges. So it gives it because sometimes the plate will be like frozen. So it'll give it like a bit of a crunch almost at that edge. But there's other variations and stuff that do like spaghetti carbonara using dark chocolate and nuts.
That is the most, and I say this with this being the highest of compliments, that is the most cartoony ass Nickelodeon shit right? I've ever heard. If right? I saw that as a child, I would be like, I'm going to die if I don't eat this. If I saw that as a kid, I would throw an absolute fit about it. I would demand the spaghetti ice cream.
Oh,
that,
yeah.
That's something I would try to recreate with Play-Doh.
Yeah. Spaghetti ice cream with, imagine this, Ferrero Rocher meatballs.
Oh, hell.
Right?
Oh.
So now I want to get into some flavors that are quite good, and that I've actually had a few of these, but are very not common, and some people think of them as gross in the US. In Korea, sweet corn ice cream is pretty popular. And
I have had that. I forget where I had a vegan version of sweet corn ice cream, but they took it even further, and it was like fire roasted and had some chili powder in it. And it was more like an elote ice cream. And I forget where the hell I had it. But corn ice cream is good.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Some people, generally, from what I've seen, you either love it or you hate it. A lot of times it's mixed with vanilla. So if you imagine there's like a buttery richness of the corn and then the sweetness of the vanilla, it doesn't like clash. It works together.
Yeah.
Think of like corn syrup is very sweet. That is the sweetness that is in corn. That's where we get corn syrup from.
I don't know if it's also just because we're Southern, but sweet cornbread.
Sweet cornbread, exactly.
Yeah,
it's that same
sweet,
flavor profile.
Sweet corn is not an odd thing to me.
Now, I want to talk about the Philippines, because the Philippines has some fucking buck wild flavors. They're going crazy, and I love them. And some of these things look so good. They're really like breaking boundaries when it comes to ice cream flavors. So the first one is queso ice cream, cheese ice cream.
Yeah.
Cheddar cheese. I have had this. I used to live next to an Asian market that carried cheese ice cream. It's actually really good.
I get it too, because there's also like certain apple pie people will put cheese on.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like having traditionally that salty sort of sharp,
exactly,
cheesy with the sweet. I get it.
It is exactly. It is salty and sweet in one scoop is what it is.
Yeah,
That was the experience that I had. A lot of people compare it to cheesecake, but a little bit on the more savory side of cheesecake. And that's really what it is. I want to say there are a few like US brands out there that have done things like, in my research, God save me, I saw, I forget the name of the brand, but they did Kraft macaroni and cheese ice cream.
No.
No, that's bad. That's wrong. You need to look at these amazing Filipino desserts that they're making. in the Philippines, similar to, you know, the street foods that you may be familiar with in other parts of the world, they have sorbeteros, which are basically ice cream street peddlers. Mm-hmm. And colloquially, it's called, what they're selling is called dirty ice cream, though the product is not filthy. It's just inexpensive, as in dirt cheap. So
that
it's
seems
not
mean
like,
to call it dirty ice cream.
I agree. It's not what I would call them, but that's just colloquially what it's called, apparently. Okay. But they have all sorts of really interesting flavors. They have the cheese ice cream. They also have ube ice cream, which you may have had that.
Up.
That's becoming more popular in the U.S. Yeah. So, so good. Ube, for those of you who don't know, is essentially a purple yam, and it has kind of a sweet, nutty, like, I would say, like, kind of vanilla coconutty, less on the coconut. But
there's almost a floral sort of note to it, I think. I made a sweet potato pie with ube a couple months ago.
Yeah, and it was really, really good. One of my favorite things about ube is just how purple it is.
It was so
it's
purple.
So
it was
purple.
Beautiful.
Yeah, I love it. And they also make, sometimes if you had like bubble tea and things, you can get ube flavor in your bubble tea. Really kind of the epitome of Philippines, quote unquote, dirty ice cream. You have halo-halo, or halo-halo as some people call it, which in apparently in Tagalog means mix-mix. Halo-halo is made with crushed ice, evaporated milk, coconut milk, ube jam, sweetened kidney beans, garbanzo beans, coconut strips, boiled taro, soft yams, flan, slices of fruit preserves. It's a whole bunch of
it's
stuff.
Got
kind
just
of like a sundae.
Slices of flan in it?
Yeah.
I love everything.
Yeah, it's got like cubes of flan that have been chopped up.
Fuck me up. That's kind of, you just listed a bunch of things that I like.
Yeah. So it literally just means mix, and it's just a mixture of things that you like with ice cream. So kind of like how we have ice cream sundaes here, where you have banana and whipped cream
and chocolate.
Yeah,
just put everything. Yeah.
It's like that, but it's the Filipino version of it.
I love that.
And it's so cool. You can get so many interesting ingredients. You can even get sweet corn. You can get a specific type of banana called Saba bananas in it.
I think Saba bananas are on my list of bananas I want to eat before I die. Let me see. Yeah, a lot of the bananas I want to... So for anyone who doesn't know, I have a list of bananas I want to try before I die. Yeah, Saba's on my list. Yes.
I would love to try a Saba banana. From what I understand, it's very sweet.
Yeah, and it's one that cooks well. I really like Filipino food.
Same.
And what's not really funny, but a lot of the flavors overlap with Puerto Rican food because my Filipino friends also have beef with Spain.
Yep.
So a lot of the flavors are very similar, and I like.
Right.
And it's just interesting the overlap. But fuck me up. If you made a vegan version of that mix, I would go to town on that.
We should do that at some point.
I think that would be great.
I have a few more ice creams on my list that I want to mention.
Please tell me.
So there's a specific type of Russian ice cream called plombir.
Mm-hmm.
Plombir is basically just ice cream, but it's made with more fat and more eggs. So it's extremely rich ice cream. Like, to be called plombir in Russia, the fat content must be between 12 and 20%, and the sugar content must be over 14%.
Whoa.
And there's
I would be so sick.
Right? There's also a threshold for the total, quote-unquote, dry substance content, which I can only assume represents the total amount of solids. So that must exceed 37 to 42% depending on the fat content. In other words, it's extremely rich, much richer than your typical ice cream if you err on the upper side or err on the side of the upper bounds of those ratios, right? So it's basically just it's not like one specific flavor, but it's a way of making ice cream that is just
extra rich.
As decadent as you can make it, basically.
My weak ass with no gallbladder could not handle that.
Yeah, even I would struggle, I think. Traditionally, it's mixed with candied fruits marinated in kirsch. So yeah.
Oh, nice.
That's plombir. The next one I have is called, I'm going to do my very best to pronounce this, Tvaruchki ice cream.
It's a you looked at me for confirmation. I'm like, girl, I don't fucking know.
I know. Tvaruchki ice cream is a sweet, salty ice cream made from a pungent Czech cheese called Olomouké Tvaruchki, which is apparently very, very popular in one particular small Czech town. But apparently it's considered an acquired taste because it is so stinky. And apparently the reason the ice cream was so popular is that the odor is suppressed by the cold temperature.
Okay. So here we have this cheese that you can eat. Nobody wants it. Let's turn it into ice cream.
People like it all right. But then this one cafe said, let's make it into ice cream. And they sold out.
Wow.
So yeah, that now it's very, very popular there. There's also an Indian dessert that you probably have heard of called kulfi.
God, it's so good. It's so fucking
so
good.
So good.
One of my best friends, one of my best friends growing up was Indian, and her mom would make it. Mm. And I have such good memories of eating kulfi. It's so, so good.
I've had it once in my life, and I've thought about it since. It's so good.
Yeah, it's so fucking good.
In traditional ice cream, you churn it to incorporate air, which makes it kind of like lighter and fluffier. In kulfi, you cook it slowly, like slowly simmer it with sweetened milk that is frozen, then frozen without any churning. So you're not mixing any air into it. You get this really dense and rich texture without adding tons and tons of fat and things like that. And it's typically flavored with things like cardamom, saffron, and pistachios, and almonds.
So fucking good.
Ugh, so good. So basically, rather than churning ice cream with a bunch of sugar and other fats and things like that, you are just taking milk and reducing it.
Yeah.
Just milk, right? You're concentrating the milk. There's generally no eggs in it. Which gives it a very different mouthfeel than a lot of American style ice creams, probably a little bit more similar to some of the vegan ice creams you might have tried in the past.
I would say, yeah, like it doesn't linger on the tongue as long.
Right. It doesn't like coat your mouth in the same way, which some people prefer that it does not do that. So,
yeah, I definitely liked it. There's something I think also a little more like refreshing.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Like, there's definitely a refreshing quality, and I think a lot of the spices that are used too feel refreshing as well. I've had a few Ninja Creamies saved, like used ones saved. Consider, and you might make me pull the trigger on that.
I'd be down to going with you on that because this has been researching. This has been making me want some ice cream. I've got a few more ice creams to tell you about because I had so many interesting ones. There's another one in from Turkey. It's a Turkish ice cream called dondurma. Dondurma is an ice cream known for its thick, stretchy, and chewy texture, which makes it resistant to melting. And it gets its consistency from the use of a flour called salep, which is made from orchid roots. And sometimes even mastic resin, which you may be familiar from mastic gum.
Yeah.
Yeah. So unlike regular ice cream, it's traditionally eaten with a knife and fork.
Cool.
Yeah. You like slice it up and you eat it in slices.
That's
and
fucking
It doesn't melt. So yeah, it's really, really interesting. And I would probably, just based on what I've seen, liken it to something like the texture of maybe mochi, if you've had that.
Amazing.
Yeah, it looks really, really cool. And I would love to try it. I have a Persian ice cream here called Bastani Sonati. Which is, I think I said that very Italian, but it's Persian. Apologies, my pronunciation is probably horrible. But it's a Persian dessert, also called saffron ice cream. And it is specifically ice cream that is made with a combination of saffron, rose water, and pistachios. And sometimes they add salep, like dondurma, so it to thicken
amazing.
It some. Yeah, yeah. But that combination specifically of saffron, rosewater, pistachios, that is what makes it Bastani Sonati, apparently. There's another one that I found called Buza. It is made basically by taking ice cream and instead of churning it, you pound it and stretch it in a freezer drum.
Oh, almost like mochi.
Almost like mochi, yeah. I don't know if it includes that same root. I know that this one typically does use mastic, and I don't know if they use that same orchid root, like flower, as before, but they definitely use mastic in this one. And here they typically shape it into like a roll, and that's how they serve it, is in like a roll of buza. Yeah. And then the last thing I wanted to mention was just kind of like an honorable mention. There's a YouTuber by the name of Just In The Trees. His name is Justin. And he makes ice cream out of wood. He flavors it with wood. And I know that sounds super weird, but some of these ice creams look really good. Like, he turned cedar wood into chocolate chip ice cream. He also goes in and, like, carves a bowl for it out of that same wood to eat it out of.
Oh, I've seen this guy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He has a video where he turned a spruce tree into a bowl of ice cream, and God, it looks really good. And, like, some of them turn out very bad tasting, as you can imagine. Like, I think there's a... What's that tree that smells like sperm and stuff like that? I forget what it's called.
Bradford pear?
Yeah, yeah. He made a he made a bowl of ice cream out of Bradford pear, and it tasted as bad as you can imagine. Other stuff like cedar and spruce, I imagine, turned out very good. Ponderosa pine bark, he did some ice cream. Plum wood. So really, really interesting guy, interesting woodworker. And just really, this isn't even like a cultural thing. It's just, I don't see anybody else fucking doing this. So, like,
that's cool.
Hell yeah. Interesting ice cream flavors.
Well, are you ready for my final topic?
Yeah, more poop demons. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, no, we visited hell. Now it's time
poop
to
angels.
Toilet gods.
I love it. I love it.
So I had already looked up several of the demons for my writing research. And I thought I was just going to do, I had a separate thing chosen for my second topic. But while I was like, let me make sure I get the facts on these toilet demons correct, while I was researching, I ran into some toilet gods, and I got distracted and read about a bunch of toilet gods I didn't know about before, which is the spirit of Info Dump Bees.
Yeah, I think I need to know this so I know who to pray to in my dark times.
Well, I don't think you'll want to pray to the first one, because even though she is technically a toilet god, she is not a nice woman.
Oh, no.
So the first one we're going to talk about is Chuk-sin, the Korean goddess of the toilet.
Hmm.
So there is something which, I'm sorry if my pronunciation is not correct, Goshin faith, which is an ancient form of Korean shamanism that is based on the belief and rituals around the household and the spirits that protect rooms in the house and objects in the house.
Oh, interesting. I hadn't heard of that before.
Yeah, I hadn't either. I kind of want to go do a deep dive on that a little more later. But Chuk-sin is the goddess of the toilet, and she's described, and this part is weird, looking like a young virgin, which is like, okay, weird. But specifically, with 150 centimeter hair.
That's very long.
It's very long hair. Yes.
I'm not like good with centimeters.
It's like, but it's about 59 inches.
Oh, wow. So that's like, I think I'm 72 inches tall. So that's a lot.
It's very long hair.
Yeah. Wow.
So she was said to have been exiled to the outhouse by the supreme deity. And I apologize, I don't speak any Korean. Cheongji Wong, the supreme deity, and the kitchen goddess, Jeongshin, and she is considered an evil and malevolent deity.
Oh, interesting. So she's a god, but she's a bad god.
She's a bad god, yes.
Interesting.
She's been exiled to the outhouse, so she spends most of her time in there counting her hair.
Counting her hair? Like the length or the number?
Her individual hairs.
Huh. I imagine that would take a long time.
Well, she's exiled to the outhouse. What else is she going to do?
Yeah, true. I guess, what does she do when she counts them all? Just, like, starts over?
Well, we'll get to that. We don't know what happens necessarily when she finishes, but she does have some, I guess you could call them, hobbies.
Okay.
So she was believed to appear in the 3 days containing the number six. So Koreans following Gashin faith would do rituals on the 6th, 16th, and 26th days of the lunar calendar. These rituals were called jessas. I'm probably mispronouncing that as well. These jessas were also done when a shoe or child fell into the pit toilet.
Oh. Was that common?
Yes, apparently common enough that if your child fell into the pit toilet, you had to do one of these jessas to her or your child would not live to adulthood.
Oh my God. Could you imagine being a kid and falling in the pit toilet? Oh.
Awful. Awful.
Oh.
You would also do one of these rituals to her when one of your pigs contracted a disease, because that was apparently her fault. Or when you built a new outhouse, just to say, hey, girl, this is the new outhouse. Hey, girl. So you really wanted to appease Chuk-sin.
Got it.
She hates children.
Oh.
She hates children, and she is the one who, when she's not counting her hair, was said to topple kids into the toilet pit.
She sounds like a bitch.
Yeah, she does. If someone failed to cough 3 times before entering the outhouse, Chuk-sin was said to attack them with her hair. When their skin touched her hair, they would get sick and die. Even the most powerful of shamans could not fix this if they've been touched by her hair.
So this begs the question for me. What exactly is the difference between an evil god and a demon? I don't know. I don't quite understand. And maybe it's I don't understand the culture of that specific belief system, but this sounds like a demon.
So apart from the Judeo-Christian god, in polytheistic religions, the gods are more complex beings, I would say.
Very true.
With flaws. The Judeo-Christian god is supposed to be infallible, which I think is where we Westerners tend to go, well, that doesn't sound very godlike. Well,
true.
Yeah, true. Not with our context.
True. Well said.
So the next one. Now, not technically a toilet goddess, but she's the goddess of a specific sewer drain.
What? Like one sewer drain?
One specific sewer drain.
God, if I was a deity, that would be me. I would be the goddess of one specific thing.
Her name, and if I pronounce this wrong, some asshole on Spotify is going to have a comment for me, but I don't care. Cloacina or Cloacina. You know,
both of those are way too close to cloaca for me.
Well, that's because her name comes from the word cloaca.
Oh, don't like that. I don't like cloacas.
It meant something a little different back then. So it would mean sewer, underground drainage, or when verbed, to purify. Hmm. Her name was likely interpreted to be the purifier.
Oh, interesting.
So she was, and this is the part that's so funny to me, she was specifically the goddess of the Cloaca Maxima.
The big cloaca.
The big cloaca. So this,
where is the big cloaca?
Ancient Rome.
Oh my
and
God.
This was the big drain to which their other smaller drains fed into and fed away from the city.
Wow.
So she was the goddess of the Cloaca Maxima.
Wow. That's so okay. Ancient Rome, you have a sewer system for, like, presumably the first time or one of the first times, right? I guess it makes sense if you have a really big part of that to have a god for it, or a goddess, I should say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there are some English writings that later refer to the bathroom as the Temple of Cloacina or Cloacina.
Well, that's what I'm calling it from now on.
Yes. Yes.
I must retire to the Temple of Cloacina after this recording.
So, if you're nervous about shitting after this, might I suggest a quick prayer to the Shinto deity Kawayakami?
Hell yeah, I love it.
So, Kawayakami is a toilet god.
Hell yeah.
known by different names depending on where in Japan you are. So I found lists of, like, in this prefecture, the toilet god is called this, and in this prefecture, it's called this. So probably, you know, if you are someone who happens to know about Japanese toilet deities, yeah, there are different names, but I'm going with the one that was most accessible to me. He is the opposite of Chuxin. He keeps you from falling into the toilet pit.
Oh, hell yeah. Yeah. I love this guy.
Yeah. He is also responsible for crop fertility.
Oh, I could see that makes sense.
In certain places, on the new year, the family would sit on a mat in front of the outhouse and eat a mouthful of rice as a ritual for Kawaiikami.
Hmm.
And to appease him, one should keep the toilet as clean and decorated as possible.
Okay.
What is the consequence of not appeasing him? Well, ugly babies.
Oh, wow.
It was believed that if you kept a dirty toilet, you'd piss off Kawaiikami and have ugly, ill-tempered children.
Interesting. So if you, like, are showing off your new baby to someone and they go, oh, he's very, well, what a good baby that is, right?
Oh, they're probably thinking. It wouldn't be a good baby. It would be an ill-tempered baby.
Oh, gotcha. But so they just go, well, that's a baby. Mm, you got a baby there. Thanks for showing me your baby.
Your baby.
They're thinking your toilet's dirty.
Yep. Yep.
Got it.
And didn't decorate the toilet good. So, yeah, I'm sorry yours was full of delicious ice cream and mine was so poop-centric.
That's okay. Mine was ice cream and ice birds and yours was
your
soft
theme
serve.
Was ice.
And
your theme was ice and mine was human shit.
That's all right. Sometimes, you know what? We don't compare notes before these episodes.
No, we
and
don't.
Sometimes
which is
it just
part
happens.
Of the fun. Yeah. There are some other really fun ones from Japan that I might save for something else. There was one demon who asks you if you want to use the red toilet paper or the blue toilet paper, like the Matrix. and the answer is neither, because he'll kill you one way or another way.
Wow. I mean, the first thing that, like, would tip me off would be like, why is there two different colors of toilet paper? I typically just don't use any toilet paper that isn't white.
Yeah, and if you try to trick him and say yellow, he drowns you in your own piss.
Whoa, that's not good.
Friends, before I get to thanking our Patreon supporters, I would like to make you aware of a mutual aid opportunity. If you look at the links in our show details, you find the links for funds for Wadi. Wadi is a young Palestinian man living in Gaza in a tent with the 7 family members. And Funds for Wadi regularly runs raffles to earn money for Wadi and his family to get the things they need to survive, like food, when the food available in the Gaza Strip is exponentially pricier than it needs to be and untenable for feeding a family of 7. And also things like getting the family a new tent, as it is winter in Gaza and the environmental conditions are increasingly harsh. So if you would like to help support Wadi and his family, you can go to our show details and find links to both the Funds for Wadi Instagram page and his Chuffed campaign where you can donate directly. And now I'd like to thank our Patreon supporters like Anarchista, Bethany Glass, Carl Brooks, Chamberlain Foreman, Fintago, Dave Perrell, Gus, Helen Clifford, Janice Weston, Kate Genius, Kate Michigoose, Laura Kramer, Lilith Rain, Lutzi, Megan E., Natasha Neves, Nanya B., Percy, Rachel Rachelson, Randy Lovings, and Sewing Seraph. If you'd like to help us out, you probably already know the best way to do that, and that's to tell other people about the show. We don't take paid ads and we don't pay for advertising. And additionally, honest to God, just because of my autism, y'all telling other people about the show helps me so much. It is rough being an autistic person making content on the internet and being called a slur for saying anything a lot of the time. And honestly, it is an accessibility thing when y'all tell other people about these shows because God, my autistic ass cannot, and also have good enough mental health to keep creating things. So you are literally acting as a disability accommodation to me when you help promote this show, because that is the area of content creation that is the hardest on me, and falls on me being the showrunner for most of, well, all of the stuff we do at Mixnomer. So, honest to God, you want to help me personally tell other people about the shows we do, get other people on board with one or more of our shows, tell them about the Mixnomer gang and what you like about our content, share it on social media, share it with a coworker, share it with a friend, share it with an enemy, even. Maybe it'll turn into an enemies to lovers thing. It's not a guarantee, but it could. Yeah, so the way you can help us the most is share about the show. Additionally, if you want to help us more and get us more action in the algorithms of your respective podcatchers, you can leave a nice comment on the episode or a nice rating plus review to let other people know what they're getting into. All of that not only helps us look good to the algorithms and get promoted more by folks who like similar shows, but it also lets the show look active when people actually come look at our profile on the respective podcatcher apps and let people know that there is an active audience participating with this show. So that is another way you can help us quite a bit. If you're in a place to help us monetarily, like the folks I listed towards the top of this housekeeping section, you can find a link to the Mixnomer Patreon page in the show details. There you will get rewards for all of the shit Mixnomer has done and will do and is currently doing. It's the one-stop shop to support everything we do. All of your support, starting with today's lucky winner, is the reason why we were ever able to consider doing Info Dumpies and doing Murphy Bay Magic, which if you haven't checked out, you should. Even if you are just a fan of Info Dumpies and you have not listened to the audio drama we make, Murphy Bay Magic is a good jumping on point into the Reediverse, as I think we've landed on. And I wish you'd go check it out. And if you want to come hang out with us, you can find a link to the Discord server in the show details. Best vibes. Great group. Love it. Can't recommend it enough. The only Discord server I manage to be active in, and I think that would be true even if it weren't my Discord server. The shows we make attract just the biggest sweethearts, and I am so proud of that, and the sweet, sweet angels that are in that Discord server. But that's all I've got for y'all this time, my friends. Until next time, clever sign off.